All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Tonight, Kara and I, we are discussing nuclear missiles. All right, let's get into our story.
Let's talk about it.
We're going to cover three nuclear stories here today. Number one is from NPR.org. There are still around 650 missing Nazi uranium cubes, completely unaccounted for. At the time of Hitler's rise, Germany was actually at the cutting edge of nuclear technology. Nuclear fission was discovered in Berlin in late 1938. They were the first team of people who figured out how to split the atom and figured out that when you split the atom, a lot of energy was going to be released. But back in World War II, it was all theoretical to find out how this could work. The Germans devised a strange-looking experiment with a bunch of cubes hanging from what looked like a chandelier. The chandelier was dipped into a cylindrical tank of heavy water, which contains special isotopes of hydrogen that make it more conductive to nuclear reactions. The setup was known as the B8 reactor. The Germans were experimenting with it inside a cave in southern town of German Place. They were still trying to get it to work when the Allied invasion began. As Allied forces approached, the German scientists disassembled the reactor and buried the cubes in a field. Although the Nazi scientists quickly disclosed the location of the buried cubes to the Allies, it's not entirely clear what happened to all the cubes here once we had them, and it's assumed that maybe they were put into our own nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I hope that's what happened and they're not just in a German farmhouse somewhere.
Well, you know, what this really makes me think of is all the speculation that went into German technology.
Sure.
You know, because we're, you know, into the mysterious and the conspiracy here, you know, that whole era of German technology, you know, what we do know is that we were at a race to get the nuclear bomb with Germany. And, you know, they were literally months out and they could have beat us to the bomb. And pretty much the bomb is what made the world surrender, was the fact that we had it and we used it.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, fear is a great motivator, you know.
Yeah. Well, at that point, it was only Japan, you know, Germany was already done for. So really, it's the bomb that made Japan surrender.
Yeah, but I also think it made a lot of people stand down.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think it's not like the conflict between, you know, us and the USSR was over at the end of World War II. It was just like, okay, everyone take a pause. This is getting crazy.
Right. But, if anything, you know, ramped up at that point. But it does make me think about what the Germans actually had.
Yeah, there's so many of these conspiracy, you know, there's so many theories about, you know, all the crazy technology the Germans might have had, which is funny because, you know, from a historical standpoint, the Germans were worse at science than most other people at the time. And what I mean by that, and it changed as World War II approached a little bit because they were ramping up for war. But like the theory of relativity, which a crucial component of like understanding why E equals MC squared, all of that, a crucial component of understanding nuclear processes, it was the official position of the Nazi party for a while that was Jewish science and was, you know, bad and evil and wrong. They hated that because, you know, it was too new, you know, they were traditionalists,
and
a lot of stuff like that. You know, there was a lot of like new developments in architecture that Hitler, like, they micromanaged the science and the arts in the Third Reich to a spectacular degree and really just stamped out all innovation.
You know, with the totalitarian,
a lot of these guys went to the United States
and Russia.
And Russia.
You know, in a totalitarianism, you know, it makes sense to micromanage and control the arts and messaging like that. But I mean, to stop science because it's Jew science is like, Well, it's kind of like treating it like a religion when it's really not. So, I mean, here's crazy ass Hitler running to the other side of the planet to get the Spear of Destiny or whatever the hell they're looking for. Yet they're not willing to do proven mathematical science because it might have come from some Jewish people. I don't know. It seems you deserve to lose the war at that point. Not that you didn't already, but now doubly.
Here's the thing about fascists, and I think this is maybe salient today. I don't know. It might have something. By and large, people who are fascists in the sense of, you know, believing in ethno-nationalist authoritarian ideals are crazy conspiracy loons.
Yeah.
You know, by and large, these people are not terribly with it in terms of engaging with reality. So,
not progressive in keeping up with the changes, and I get that. Yeah.
So yeah, if these guys were smart, they would have done a lot of stuff differently. But if they were smart, they couldn't have taken over Germany because, you know, this fascism requires a certain amount of anti-intellectualism as an ideology. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Well, they did beat us to one invention. I mean, they had the VR rockets.
They were good at rockets. I will give them that. I mean,
old science, right? At that point, that's old.
Well, it's all, you know, based on classical Newtonian mechanics. The other thing that, like, there's also this, you know, in pop culture, there's this thing like, who knows what crazy things they learned from, like, the horrible unethical experiments they were doing in the concentration camps. But anyone who studied those experiments knows that they are useless in science. They produce no data because their methodology was sloppy and they weren't studying anything. They were just torturing people and calling it science. And it was all motivated by outdated, crazy racial ideologies. So it was like built on flawed premises and done badly. And so, like, everyone in the field knows nothing useful came out of any of that.
Right.
But in pop culture, there's this idea that something did.
And I guess you're right. But the rockets did, you know, but other than that, you're right. They work sort of like the world forerunner in phrenology or whatever in, like, the world's most useless sciences.
They were, they were very, like, 1870s, 1890s. They were like clinging on to 19th century stuff.
Well, that's good for
way
us.
Way the heck into the 30s. Yeah. So no wonder we won.
Yeah. That is good. That is good. Because to me, dipping cubes, tying cubes to an airplane, and then dipping them in hard water and stuff like that, that seems like alchemy, not science.
Yeah. Well, I've no doubt that this invention probably, as you said, they were close. But by that point, they were, like, gearing up for war. So I guess that maybe practicality took the forefront a little bit. And, you know, they weren't unified either, necessarily. You know, there were a lot of factions within the Nazis with a lot of different ideas, and some were more sane than others. You know, they were all horrible, of course.
And I mean, you know, that's an argument for not being a jerk, because all these Jews with their Jew science were probably not dying to share their Jew science with you anyway. Well, so they came to them and they're just all, we want you. And they're just all, what? I don't know. Nothing, you know.
Or they've left the country by then.
Right. Yeah. I cannot say that I blame them.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, anybody out there, I've heard people get weird when I use the word Jew. Jew is fine as long as it's not used as a verb. If you use it as a verb, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
All right. all right. So, you know, not a shocking tale, but an interesting one.
Yeah, I want to know where these things went. I'm concerned.
Me too. All right, so after this break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about an article from history.com. Why have there been so many UFO sightings near nuclear facilities? Something that has been a regular topic in the UFO community for a long time.
Yeah.
And we're going to tackle it next. We're going to solve this in 10 minutes. All All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Our topic right now, why have there been so many UFO sightings near nuclear facilities? In the last 75 years, high-ranking U.S. military intelligence personnel have reported UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, near sites associated with nuclear power, weaponry, and technology, from the early atomic bomb development and test sites to active nuclear naval fleets. All of the nuclear facilities, Los Alamos, Livermore, Sandia, Savannah River, all had dramatic incidents where these unknown craft appeared over the facilities and nobody knew where they came from or what they were doing there. And that's a quote from investigative journalist George Knapp. And I'm guessing we all know who that is. Coming at you out of the desert like a Scirocco or whatever. That's his introduction on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
Nuclear adjacent sightings go back decades. A UFO researcher and author of US UFOs and Nukes, Robert Hastings, Extraordinary Encounters at Nuclear Weapon Sites. Hastings says he's interviewed more than 160 veterans who've witnessed strange things in the skies around nuclear sites. In 1948, green fireballs were reported in the skies near atomic laboratories in Los Alamos and Sandia, New Mexico. And there are a lot of other ones too. The Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana and the Bentwaters Rendlesham Forest incident. Mm. Bentwaters housed a secret stash of nuclear weapons in 25 fortified underground bunkers. So, you know, of course, this is a topic that we've dealt with before a lot of guests. Sure.
Kind of, but in passing,
we normally have guests
really dug into it.
Right. Yeah. And it's normally our guests' opinions.
Right.
Now, let's, for the sake of argument, remove skepticism that aliens are even coming here at all and stuff like that.
Sure.
You know, what's your take on aliens coming, extraterrestrials, as our last guest corrected me on? Mm-hmm. Coming directly or to nuclear sites. When you hear that, do you kind of scoff at it and say it's odd? Because I have two thoughts on it. One is it's very obviously tied together because here's one thing we fear, here's another thing we fear. We put them together. All of a sudden we have an infectious zombie vampire werewolf. Of course we want to shove them together, you know? So it seems like an obvious mix. Mm-hmm. But then the other part of me, you know, has seen enough science fiction to know that, maybe people are trying to wrangle us.
Yeah. Okay, so my thought is that I'm skeptical of this, but if we are, like you say, just leaving aside skepticism for a second and saying, you know, there definitely are a higher percentage of UFO sightings near these sites that are in fact aliens, then what I'm thinking is that the aliens know something we don't know. Namely, either we're going to destroy ourselves in a nuclear holocaust, or we're missing like the massive implications of nuclear power somehow. Like maybe they're just waiting to see if we crack, you know, cold fusion or whatever.
So it's like First Contact, Star Trek, you know, when we get the warp drive and now the Vulcans are willing to be our buddy.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, maybe it's some intergalactic regulation, you know, once they have this, once they reach this benchmark, they can talk to us, or it's a great filter kind of thing, and they're waiting to see if we destroy ourselves.
Yeah, I have a third option. So, I went to college back in my 20s, dropped out.
Nice. Yeah.
Dropped out. I took basic sociology, which I also dropped out of, but I was in it long enough to know that there are three really rudimentary views of sociology. One is interactionism, the belief that interactions between two people is what changes the world, motivates the world. One is functionalism, the belief that groups of people's interaction is what motivates and changes the world. Okay. And the last one is conflict theorism, the belief that everybody's basically in a battle for resources. And, you know, maybe they just don't want us to mess up something that could be good for them.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, maybe they're like watching us and they're opposed to us using nuclear. Because I kind of feel in the world of space travel and in the world of the cosmos, a nuclear explosion, even our largest bomb,
sure,
our largest bomb that we've never blown up, we think will leave a crater a mile wide and just be massive. Sure. But in the cosmic world, I don't imagine that to be so huge. But what it could do is ruin our own planet, and therefore they would say, like, oh, this one's ruined. We can't take their stuff no more.
Well, the fallout of a nuclear bomb doesn't last terribly long, though.
Well, nuclear war.
Even with a nuclear war, it doesn't last that long. Only a couple weeks, really. It can persist in some, you know, sources for longer, but...
What about Chernobyl and these places that are still toxic?
Chernobyl wasn't a nuclear bomb. It was a nuclear reactor that melted down. And okay, you've got a lot more fissile material there. And it just... I'm not an expert, obviously, but just...
Well, you're more of an expert than I am, so lay it on me, sister.
the way the two processes work, just one leaves a lot more radioactivity sitting around.
I get you. A
nuclear bomb doesn't have nuclear waste.
What about fallout and nuclear winter and these things that...
Oh, so nuclear winter is a huge problem. But fallout, like I said, is, you know, mostly gone within like 2 weeks. Because the bomb is just packed with enough radioactive particles to have that critical mass so it can
to start explode. The chain reaction.
But a nuclear power plant is full of highly radioactive waste, which is not fissile. It's just gunk that's super radioactive and will take hundreds of years to decay.
I see.
And that, you know, there's no reason to pack a bomb full of that unless it's a dirty bomb, in which case the idea is to leave behind fallout, which of course would be a horrible catastrophe.
So I have another motivation. Maybe they want us to nuke each other out so they can come and take the planet.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be a little more proactive, you know, if that's what they wanted to happen. You know, if they have the technology, they could easily just, you know, send an ICBM of their own just from Russia, kickstart this whole thing.
Listen, they only have half the amount of weight. Have you ever seen a big movie? So you got big movies, you got somebody in their makeup and they're constantly like complaining that they've been in the makeup chair for 4, 5, 6 hours. Now imagine being a reptilian and having to put on human skin in order to, I mean, you know, this is a good 6 hours in the makeup chair before you're even able to try to infiltrate to fire the missile.
It's true. So they're too busy primping to hearing about Armageddon, I see.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, well, now I have a question. Is this just sightings near nuclear silos, or is it sightings near nuclear power sources, or both?
All of the above. The article even cited naval fleets, like nuclear powered naval fleets.
No, that's weird. If this is genuine, there just must be something that we don't know about nuclear power, you know?
Yeah.
There must be some other element to it. Maybe it's just like, this is the only weapon we have that could conceivably hurt them. So they're just
constantly checking it out to say, okay, well,
yeah,
well, these people aren't a threat.
Right. Maybe it's something like, we have people on standby. So in case they figure out about a little probing operation and, you know, announce that we're here, we will immediately zap all the nuclear bombs so that they can't hurt us in case things go south. And then we can negotiate.
Did you just refer to the aliens coming here as their little probing operation?
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. All right. So, you know, coming up next here, we have a really weird one. We have a couple seconds here. We're going to try to pronounce this. Alyoshenka. Alyoshenka.
I think that's right.
The Christian dwarf. Alyoshenka, the Christian dwarf. This is a weird one. Come on back. Still nuclear. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. This article is from mysteriesareunsolved.com. That's mysteries, the letter R, unsolved.com. And Alyosha, the Christian dwarf. Mm-hmm. In 1957, Christian was confronted with the first nuclear disaster in Soviet history. Christian is a town. Plutonium exploded at Mayak, a nearby secret nuclear power station, throwing a 160-ton concrete lid into the air. The nuclear explosion is considered the third most serious nuclear accident in history behind Fukushima and Chernobyl. The region and atmosphere were extremely polluted and became hazardous. Decades later, one day in 1990, Tamara Prosvarina found a strange... I do try to read these things ahead of time, but I mean, you know, it's Russian. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's a Russian name. I know. I'm just giving you a hard time with my facial expressions.
Found a strange creature in the woods. And 20 years since her death and that of the humanoid, people still argue what it really was. Its name was Alyosha. Those who saw Alyosha described it as a 20-25 centimeter tall humanoid, brown body, no hair, big protruding eyes, moving its tiny lips and making squeaky sounds. The Christian dwarf died with no one to feed him when Tamara was in the psychiatric hospital. That's terrible. A morbid anatomist who performed an autopsy on the body of the dwarf in a local hospital. He was the first to claim that the creature was a non-human being. The human skull consists of six bones. The skull of that creature was made up of four bones, he said. The body of the dwarf was reportedly stolen and is still missing. The old woman who actually named the dwarf died when a car hit her. She had been dancing on the highway.
Yeah.
The local gynecologist claimed that it was just a child with terrible deformations. And there were other differences in the skeletal structure. Those anomalies didn't look like any congenital malformities known to date. DNA from the cloth, the creature had been kept, was analyzed by a Moscow-based Institute of Forensic Medicine. A gene discovered in the DNA samples doesn't correspond with any genes pertaining to humans or anthropoid apes. No gene samples available at the laboratory match the gene. The experts in DNA research haven't come across any creature with such an elongated DNA molecule. So... nuclear aliens or
nuclear deformed baby.
It's alive. Yeah, basically, yeah. It's alive. You ever see that movie, It's Alive?
No.
About the monster baby?
And is then, it like Eraserhead?
Yeah, only imagine Eraserhead told by the people who wrote and directed Piranha from 1979. It's just terrible.
Okay.
Just terrible, but still great. Still great. Like Basket Case. Right. I don't know. I need more horror friends, Kara.
I'm sorry. I can't keep up. I'm not on your level. No one's on your level.
No one's on your level.
It's lonely at the top, Chauncey.
This is another one that sparks my imagination, especially being a horror fan and, you know, all the horror movies about freaky inbred babies and freaky inbred families, The Hills Have Eyes, Wrong Turn, all this stuff. That one great episode of The X-Files that was banned for a while with the inbred family in the cabin. You know, this is something that has actually, I don't want to say piqued my interest, but piqued my imagination.
Awakened something in you.
Yeah.
To say it in the most creepy and horrible way possible.
Yes, yeah, totally.
It's lit a fire.
But I don't know. What do you think of these? So if this is the case, you know, we have to weigh like how random hardcore mutation is in nature to how much of this has gone on since, let's say, 1948. 1938, if we need to go all the way back to the Nazis messing with it like we were talking about earlier. Yeah. You know,
Well, I don't know
that we have seen more than one of these if it was a mutation.
I don't know that there's been a whole lot of like really hardcore nuclear accidents in human history. It's and the ones that there were mostly in Soviet Russia, who did not have the best engineering knowledge or safety standards.
Yeah, Fukushima is too recent.
Yeah, and well, Fukushima, like, their much better knowledge of like how to contain stuff in
right because it's a recent. Chernobyl was 86. Yeah. This one was 57. So
right at that point, you know, people still kind of seeing radiation as magic, pretty much. And it's Soviet Russia, not generally a place. Soviet Russia in 57, not known for being high standards of living or particularly forthcoming to the West. So I'm feeling like it's possible there could have been lots of these cases we just didn't hear about. Like this thing was found in the woods. So if it was just some deformed kid, maybe it was abandoned or something, and this schizophrenic mom found him.
Oh yeah, I would have abandoned that thing.
God, okay.
Oh yeah.
So like I don't know. I'm thinking it's fairly likely that this is just hardcore mutations, but the analysis of its DNA, that's weird to me, especially because there's so much folklore in every culture around the world about like fey creatures and, you know, tiny people.
Yeah, like a changeling.
Yeah, changelings, and you know, in North America, your Pukwudgies, in you know, Germany, your dwarves, all like pygmies in Africa. There's so many variants of this myth. So I wonder if, you know, maybe mutations like this inspired the myth, or these are interdimensional fey creatures sent here to mess with us, or, you know, it inspires the imagination. I don't know. What do you think?
Frankly, I think it's probably some abominable combination between inbreeding and nuclear fallout.
Yeah, I think that's
you know,
and you know, deformities just happen. Like,
but I mean, this is really deformed.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this is like, well, really, that, this is like 2 feet tall, four bones in its skull. I don't know. How much is 22, 24 inches?
Yeah, that's like 2 feet.
I mean, it's like a, yeah. And
well, we could be talking about like a couple month year old child here.
Yeah,
although
that's true.
As I recall, in some sources have this creature like walking around and stuff. So it would have to be older than that if it was human.
I got it. It does prompt the question, why does all the really, really weird stuff happen in not America?
We have Mothman. We have Bigfoot.
That's true. But I mean, you know, they're not like raising it. They raise this damn thing. I mean,
yeah.
You know, no, and people out there might argue, oh, because our science and technology is so great. You know, the mortality rate for birthing women is 7 times higher for us than it is for, let's say, Denmark or something. So, I mean, while our medical technology may be great, it's not, right. It's not, you know, inbred nuclear baby grade.
I will say 1957 Russia, this is like a rural town, right?
I assume most of them are at the time, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, probably not a lot of literacy, not a lot of electrification, not a lot of contact with the outside world. Basically, you know, by American standards, we're talking about like 19th century levels of living standards. So it wouldn't be that weird to think, you know, myths could kind of be bred more easily in such an environment, you know. If we're
That's
talking
true.
About
You're
small
less...
town, small town Russia, you know, someone, the crazy lady found a deformed baby becomes, oh my God, there was an alien dwarf.
Right. And you're less you apt know? To have the the hoity-toity mansplaining rich white dude come in and be all, here, here, this is not okay, you know? How there's always that guy who like comes in and like, I don't know, I was watching something the other day and it's like some British explorer who thought he was hot crap. And he's like, oh, here, here, like talking smack to like a group of like 15 natives, like they're all beneath him and stuff. And I'm all, they're going to kill that dude and he deserves it. You know, it's like, you know, so there's not the men of science.
Right.
I don't know if I'm explaining this. The men of science.
I'm not saying these people are stupid or anything. I'm just saying they didn't have a lot of access to education and it was an insular community. So.
Yeah. And I am not complimenting the men of science that I'm pointing out. But
yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I'm going with a terrible combination of inbreeding and nuclear fallout. I can't help but to come back to that, you know?
But I do like to think. It was a fae, especially, you know, Mothman spotted near a defunct nuclear munition storage plant. Mm-hmm. The first sighting of it down there. I kind of forget the details, but it was something like that, something to do with World War II nuclear stuff. So, you know, maybe the fae just like nuclear power. Maybe it looks pretty to them. Maybe they have nuclear vision and they just see the gamma rays and they go, oh.
Totally. And then it turns them into those little freaks. All right. Well, you've been listening to Radio Wasteland. If you thought we had too much fun and didn't cover enough of the specifics of these topics, go yell it in your pillow. If you thought it was a lot of fun, go tell your friends. All right. Check us out next time on Radio Wasteland.